No, Gladys, the Madrid bombings at the weekend were by no means the most devastating terrorist attack in Spanish history. I would remind you of Guernica, where Franco, with the help from Hitler, unleashed mass terror on his own people. Of course, the Basque separatists have been waging a guerrilla war for years, but it looks less and less and less likely that they were the players at the weekend. And what is extraordinary, as B says, is that the Spanish people responded by removing a government which, up until the bombings, had appeared, well, almost certain to win the elections. Now, the Madrid bombs have re-triggered a debate about whether or not countries that took part or supported the war in Iraq, like Spain, like Australia, have made themselves targets for terrorists. Our Prime Minister tried to head this off at the pass by saying we were a target not only because of Timor, but before Timor. Now, to discuss this and more, I welcome two distinguished guests. Johan Galtung is a veteran peace activist and conflict resolution specialist. Johan is the 2004 Hayden Williams Fellow at the Centre for Human Rights Education at Curtin University. He's the director of Transcend, and way back in 59, Johan founded the International Peace Research Institute in Oslo, and he's in our Melbourne studio. In our Canberra studio is Michael Costello. Michael is currently a columnist with The Australian. He and I appear almost side by side on the op-ed pages, although we profoundly disagree on almost everything. But his CV extends way, way beyond that. Mike was chief of staff for opposition leader Kim Beazley. He was former head of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, former Australian ambassador to the United Nations, former deputy head for intelligence at the Office of National Assessments, and that's just for openers. So I welcome you both, gentlemen. And Johan, how do you read the events in Madrid?
Well, I was on Spanish radio right after it happened and was asked that question, since Spain is a country where I'm very much at home. I was in no doubt this was not ETA. There was no warning. And it was done with a coldness and with a distance, a human distance, the atrocity. Body parts of working class people, students, women, children, exactly the same way as the bombing in Baghdad, with the same coldness and distance as the Spanish Prime Minister and the Australian Prime Minister, for whom Iraq is only one more punishment expedition of uppity people. So this is, of course, a retaliation, but I have one more perspective to add to that. We are talking about fundamentalists who are also on a divine expedition. I think it's Allah's punishment that they are administering, just like the United States did with Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs back in 1945. And 9/11, I think, is in the same category. I think it was the public execution of two buildings. Now, you formulated the question, who is winning the war on terrorism? I think it's a very bad question, very bad formulation. I think we just have to look at what is behind, what's the conflict, how do we analyze that conflict, and is there any solution? And that's what I want to dedicate my time to. Thank you.
Mike, should the events in Spain be seen as indicative of a new level of danger for the citizens of those countries that supported the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq?
No. I think I know you, of all people, wouldn't fall for the schoolboy howler of post hoc ergo propter hoc. That is, because B happened after A, B was caused by A. The truth is that we have indeed been a target for this terrorism for some time. It's not made up and not arguable that East Timor brought us into that category before the events in Iraq. The reason we know that is because we have Al-Qaeda saying it on the public record on a number of occasions. It's not some conjuring trick. I think it quite likely that we will see more of these attacks. One of the things I find curious, though, is that people seem to forget that before the war on Iraq, there were many such attacks. There were attacks on the World Trade Center in the early 1990s. The bomb just wasn't big enough to blow the building up. although they certainly tried to do so. These attacks have been going on for a long while. They are not caused by the war in Iraq. They are not caused by the war in Afghanistan. They have other causes. And
what caused the election of the socialist government, in your view?
I don't think you know, nor I know yet, because we've got to see some outcomes on it. From what I heard, and I'm only following the news, this reports like everybody else, is that the government there immediately insisted that it was ETA and seemed to be exploiting it very hard because that had been a large part of its campaign, its success against ETA. And when it turned out that it looked like it wasn't, I think this revolted a lot of people. But I don't think you can say that because people of Spain opposed the war in Iraq and then and their government supported it, then an event happens that therefore, because one thing follows the other, it's caused by the other. You know that that's not so.
What do you think about that, Johan?
Well, it was 92% of the Spanish population just before the war that was against it, and the Prime Minister went ahead. The 92% is a little bit high for a democracy. It was the second in Europe after Bulgaria, 94%, where even the President was against. It was only the Prime Minister who had ties to the U.S. that made him do it. I think the tie to the U.S. is basic when it comes to the compliant countries, including my own Norway. But we have on the list of the 28 countries listed by the Japanese foreign ministry some time ago as having security jobs in Iraq, the countries that probably are the targets. And they include, of course, US, UK, Spain, Australia, Poland, Japan, Italy, but also Albania, Bulgaria, El Salvador, Netherlands, Poland, Ukraine. What do they have to do with Iraq, and what is their relationship to this? They have nothing. They only have a relationship to the U.S. And that's, of course, also one of the things that angers these people. But I don't think you can discuss it, Philip, without coming into Wahhabism in Saudi Arabia, the very fundamentalist, very Puritan faith, which is the state religion of Saudi Arabia, which is Osama bin Laden's religion. It's also the royal house. And when they attacked the World Trade Center, it was because, in their mind, the World Trade Center is an insult to Islam as a symbol of materialist consumption, commercialism, in a country that is dedicated to fulfilling the commands of the Prophet. Now, you can say this is fundamentalist talk. That doesn't mean that I don't believe it.
Mike,
so I think
I can,
we have to go
hear...
back. We have to go down to that one, you see, to the level of why it is. Now, that this happened before Iraq. 9/11 also happened before Iraq. Iraq is only one part of a big chain. And that chain started much, much before it. Let us say the 1945 agreement between Ibn Saud and Roosevelt. Well, you can start it anywhere you want. You can start with the Crusades. You can start with the 1258 massacre of Baghdad, which was done by the Pope in conjunction with the grandson of Genghis Khan. This is heavy stuff. And this is in the mind of every little school child in that part of the world, even if people in the West don't know about it.
Mike, I could hear you trying to get back in.
Well, I'm not quite sure where this leads us, you see. Let us imagine that the reason that we're a target is because of our relationship with the United States, supported by all parties, although the war in Iraq wasn't, and certainly East Timor was. Let us say that we had been confronted with a situation where we thought this was the right thing to do, but if we did it, we might be a target for terrorist attack, even though we thought it was the right thing to do. What are we to do? To say, oh, well, the terrorists will run the agenda. We'll do what they want. I'm not sure where that leads you.
Well,
I think in the end it leads you to a very negative outcome.
No, it
means
lead you to something.
You give power to terrorists, and I don't think that's a very wise thing to do.
No, you don't give the power to terrorists if you invite somebody high up in Islam simply to try to discuss publicly in a quiet way what this is about. I know Australia a little bit. The level of ignorance about Islam is abysmal. I sometimes wonder what you have a schooling system for, when I listen to the kind of mistakes people do about Islam. So, you see, I'm not saying that the level of knowledge of Christianity necessarily is that deep in the 56 Muslim countries, but we have to come within speaking distance. Let me say one thing which most people will have as a surprise. There is a saying in the Quran, 861, that when your antagonist, your enemy, shows an inclination towards peace, you shall do the same. Okay, there has been absolutely no inclination. I listened to the speeches by Mr. Downer, by Mr. Howard. There isn't one word of any kind of compassion for the victims of that side, or any understanding of what they call trampling on Islam. Well, go on like that. Go on with that kind of talk and war on terrorism and all of that. And if you want reprisals, you'll get it. And you'll just continue. For instance, I'll take another thing, too. It's beyond my understanding how you can talk about the Saturday Night Club and the 12th of July and not mention a word about Australian pedophiles operating in Bali and what that might have meant for people in that blessed island. You see, it is so one-sided, so autistic, so self-righteous, that it can only remind me of one thing, and that is Osama bin Laden's outpourings.
Mike?
Oh, dear. So you equate Australian politicians with Osama bin Laden. That's an interesting point of view. Even those who don't have a high regard for our Prime Minister, I haven't heard go quite that far.
Osama bin Laden is more intellectual. He has more knowledge in his speeches, if I may say so.
Hmm. Who's that?
Osama bin Laden.
Uh-huh. Right. Oh, well.
I haven't heard one intellectual point from Mr. Downer or from Mr. Howard.
Well, we've heard a lot of intellectual points from Mr. Bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden said, "You are now suffering the humiliation that we suffered more than 80 years ago." It's the key to the whole thing.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I see. So, really, it's a just reprisal.
No, nothing is just reprisal. Nothing can justify these atrocities that they have committed on all sides.
But you say we
killing between 10,000 and 30,000 Iraqis after the war started the 20th of March by Iraqi reckoning. Killing 200 now atrociously in Madrid, 3,000. Nothing can justify that, but I try to explain it. Because only by explaining it can you remove the causes.
Well, Mike, let me put this question to you. How do you get away from the cycle of violence between terrorism and efforts to counter terrorism by military means?
Well, I think the difference between this particular kind of terrorism is it's a bit like a couple of instances in the past, but most terrorists have an objective and they're prepared to negotiate a solution. ETA, for example, if they got their way, would stop their terrorism. It is very, very difficult to see how we could ever negotiate a solution with the people who are attacking us. Now, for example, people talk Palestine-Israeli conflict. They're not interested in a solution which brings a just two-state settlement with Israel withdrawing to its proper borders and out of the occupied territories. They want an end to Israel. They're not interested in anything that sees the infidels driven from the former lands of the caliphate. They saw East Timor as being formerly under Muslim rule, therefore it could never be anything else, and so on. Spain, they reject the fact that its former control under Muslim rule is no longer the case. That is a source of absolute hatred towards the current rulers of Spain. I mean, it's very difficult to deal with people who, if you agreed and found a solution with them, they don't want a solution. They just want
Johan,
surrender.
You believe it is feasible, it is possible to start walking in the direction of understanding.
Let me give you 2 points immediately. That was actually the topic of the telephone radio interview in Spain, an agenda for secret negotiations. You know, when people say we will never negotiate, that means that negotiations are just about coming. You could say, how about us withdrawing our troops and you promise not to commit any of your atrocities on your ground, on our ground, on our lands. It's not capitulating to terrorists. It may be that you have committed a mistake yourself, that there are mistakes on both sides. That's one. United States could withdraw a lot of bases and have a deal. I don't think that's impossible. But you can have a deeper deal. I have done something that is in this field of mediation. I've asked people in State Department, what is it you want? And I have asked Wahhabs from Saudi Arabia, what is it you want? Now, the State Department says free trade, and the Wahhabs say respect for our religion. I cannot buy that entirely, because this free trade also kills people, and their religion suppresses women, to put it mildly. But you could agree, perhaps, on having a long-term dialogue about that, and bring that dialogue out into the open. And I think a key is that if there could be one word from the Western, and particularly the Anglo-American and Anglo-Saxon side, that we may have committed in our history, maybe 1 millimeter of a mistake a couple of times, it would turn. You have 1.3 billion Muslims up against you. It's not a question of a little group called Al-Qaeda, which probably doesn't even exist, probably is mainly a kind of Pentagon construct as a pyramidal concept. It's an enormous movement.
Michael,
and it has a history of 1,400 years, this bad relation.
Michael, I've always been intrigued by back channel stuff. There was a feature film last night that you're probably familiar with on the Cuban Missile Crisis, where while things are being said publicly, there's a lot of back channel work. Is Johann right? Is it possible to have a dialogue that you're denying you're having, a fruitful dialogue?
Oh, you can, and it often happens in diplomacy. I'm quite familiar with back-channel diplomacy, having done quite a bit of it myself. Now, I give you, a lot of this is a firm belief on the part of people of goodwill, that if only they could get to talk to their enemy and both of them could lay their cards on the table and be very direct and honest with each other, then everything would be all right. I mean, JFK himself believed that when he came to power, that if he could only speak to Khrushchev, then, you know, he could sort things out. Well, he found he couldn't. There are times when you simply have to endure and wait and struggle before the circumstances change that allow that to happen. I'll give you another example quickly. In the mid-80s, when I worked for Bill Hayden, we tried very hard to get a resolution of the Cambodian conflict at great cost to our relationship with the Americans and many people in Southeast Asia because of our opposition to the Khmer Rouge. I was involved in that. 6 years later, I was involved and successfully involved in getting that solution. It was because the situation on the ground had changed dramatically. And I think it's years of struggle against terrorism and struggle between us and this particular group of terrorists before we'll get to that position, I'm afraid to say.
Well,
but nobody can say that this has been kept secret. Even George Bush, who's mishandled this, and his country have mishandled this so egregiously and grievously, even he said at the start, this will be a very, very long struggle, as did Howe.
Johann.
Now look, the attack on Iraq was not a way of handling terrorism. This was
oil,
security of Israel, the way they saw it, and to have military bases for the encirclement of Central Asia. This is old Mackinder geopolitics that we're up against.
I'm sorry.
But I would like to go into Cuba for a second, because I think there was one thing you let out of your presentation of it. It was an exchange of missiles in Turkey for missiles in Cuba. The U.S. had stationed nuclear-tipped missiles in Turkey.
Correct.
Khrushchev's move was to balance that one. Now, the exchange took the form of simply cancelling both of them, quid pro quo, tat for tat. But the U.S. couldn't admit it, because that meant that the U.S. was yielding on something. So given that extraordinary amount of pride by a country chosen by God, and it costs something when you're chosen by God, they couldn't say it. So it only comes out when McNamara writes up the whole report, and that came years after. We're going to get something of the same here, and I just hope that we have wise enough politicians at some point who are able to understand the sensitivities of the other side.
Michael, if you were pulling the levers, would you be willing to make back-channel concessions of any sort in the face of what Christopher Hitchens calls Islamic fascism?
I would be working as hard as I could to make contact with them, yes, but I would be doing so with a very realistic view that there wasn't a great deal of chance of this happening in a hurry, and that while those attempts were being tried, I would be keeping my guard up and expecting more action, and I would be fighting very hard.
And in this fighting very hard that you're talking about, would we win, or would the West win this war against terror? It can't, can it?
I don't think that that's necessarily so. It can certainly vastly diminish over time, over a long period. Things do come and do go, you know. I mean, there have been other terrorist groups that looked unstoppable in Europe in the 60s, but they've been stopped. These things can be undone if you put enough effort and time into it. But I must say, the incompetence of the Americans in the lead-up to the war in Iraq and to the follow-up period, particularly up until two or three months ago, is almost beyond belief. And it
well, I'm delighted to do some conflict resolution here, and on that on that issue, where there was a hint of agreement, I'm going to rather desperately wind this conversation up. Although I have to say, it's one of the most challenging we've had in a long time.
I'd like to say one thing: you cannot talk about terrorism without talking about state terrorism. Haiti was intervention military number 70 since 1945. The number of people killed is between 12 and 16 million by the United States of America. Hitler killed 11 million. Now try to come to grips with that one and see it from the point of view of the recipients of all those nice weapons, please.
Gentlemen, we've got to wind it up for time reasons, not because we've begun to exhaust the topic. Yeah. Two formidable gentlemen in Johan Galtung, veteran peace activist and conflict resolution specialist, 2004 Hayden Williams Fellow at the Centre for Human Rights Education at Curtin and Director of Transcend. Michael Costello, columnist for The Australian. His work appears regularly on the op-ed page. Former Chief of Staff for Opposition Leader Beazley. Former Secretary, Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Former Intelligence Ambassador to the UN. And former Deputy Head for Intelligence, ONA. You've got more formers to your credit, Michael, than anyone I've ever met.
I've barely got a present, that's the problem.
This is LNL on Radio National, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. Listen to a beautiful fragment of music.